Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Oh, what a night. Watching Tottenham on a Tuesday night.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. My name is Ben Haynes. I'm joined today by Jude Summerfield, Sean Walsh and Dan Kilpatrick to go through the good, the bad, the ugly and the beautiful over the course of the last few days in all things Spurs. And it was fairly ugly and it was fairly bad. A 3-0 defeat to Man City away from home off the back of having lost to Everton in the FA Cup 5-4 after extra time. So with that in mind, how is everyone? That's a nice face you're pulling there, Jude.
No, yeah, really good. Just feeling positive.
Positive vibes only.
Yeah.
That's all we allow in here. Shawnee?
Exactly.
Yeah, good vibes only. So let's not talk about Spurs today.
And Dan, did you go up to City?
I didn't. No, I didn't go. My colleague,
thank God,
James Robson did the game. So it was the second one I missed. And whereas I'd have quite liked to have been at Everton because it was bonkers, I'm quite glad that James did City.
It was a late finish, the Everton one as well, wasn't it? It was sort of, I looked at my watch after the back of that and I was like, how are we still playing? This is crazy because we started later than everyone else as well. So do you know what we'll do is we'll kind of try and take a more holistic approach to the two games. We won't go too granular, but we'll kind of study key themes when we go through the good and the bad and the ugly and the beautiful. Because that way we don't drown in our own sorrows. So we'll start with any good bits from those two games. And we thankfully got a really, really interesting performance against Everton. Now, there's a lot to unpack here because there was a big fallout on Twitter. I don't know if you guys saw this, over the discussion between whether it was a good performance or whether it was a bad performance. And Sean, as our resident sort of professor around the ins and outs of whether a performance is good or bad, what did you have it down as?
In the end, I settled for bad because I just felt it was hard to justify conceding 5 goals in the manner they were conceding and just be like, yeah, you know what, Spurs played well today. I think the bar is really, really low for it to come into consideration that was a good performance. Like that should be a run-of-the-mill performance where a couple of defensive errors led to us losing on the night. That shouldn't be the bar that we're holding ourselves to.
We at least have bad with good elements.
Yeah, I think we can have that. I think someone made a point in like the comments afterwards. It was like, you put down that we played well against West Ham, but we kind of threw away a 3-goal lead in the last 10 minutes there. But I think the difference with that is that was a complete freak game where that last 10 minutes could be played 100 times over again. That is never going to happen, that we throw away a lead like that. But the way that we played against Everton was always set up for goals. And I think to lean into the good, like, we actually showed that we can score goals, and we actually do try and score them. But there are obviously just still these defensive frailties that are obvious, even if we're going forward, even if we're sitting back, it's just always going to be there.
We'll stay positive. Let's stay on the good bits. Scoring goals, Dan. We haven't scored 4 goals in a lot of games this season, and we did look a little bit more open, like shackles have been taken off a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think I can really complain about the Everton result or performance at all, because I spent the whole season saying I'd much prefer
so
it
true.
If Mourinho's side just tried to outscore everyone and conceded a few than if they tried to grind out 1-0 wins. And so I've been saying that for months, so I haven't got a leg to stand on now that's what Spurs actually tried to do and it didn't quite go to plan.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, I did enjoy it as a spectacle. I think I wanted Spurs to keep going in the FA Cup because I think, you know, the season feels like it's increasingly dependent on the Cup's severe success. But yeah, it was much more enjoyable than sort of Palace or Wolves or Fulham matches, which was obviously a much more restrained handbrake on style. I agree with Sean largely. I also think there was a kind of freak element to the Everton game as well. I think you don't normally get games where both teams are scoring with the kind of that frequency and that ease. I think in an attacking sense, it was definitely a step in the right direction, given that Spurs looked so good and that Kane didn't start the game. There were positives to take there. And I think, you know, the positive from City, right, is that no one should judge themselves against City because they're streets ahead of everyone else. So the only positive I can pick from City is that let's not worry about it, in the same way that we can't really draw any conclusions from West Brom because they're terrible. So let's just kind of write off the last 2 league games and take the positives from the Everton game.
God, it's a hell of a lot. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, just to quickly piggyback on what Dan said about, you know, we've been saying all season we'd rather play like this and lose like this. I think we can always appreciate that is the way that we're going to do it, but also acknowledge that it wasn't a good overall performance at the same time. Like that, it's better like that than death by a thousand cuts.
You're
or
a slave to the spreadsheet, Sean.
I actually haven't updated from the City game. I don't want to look at it right now.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. I think it's that difficult middle ground, right? That it doesn't have to be
yeah.
disaster class at the back if you're just a little bit more open going forward, right? And go on, man.
Yeah, because before this, like the recent months, it's just been like sometimes it doesn't feel like we've been trying. Like, at least against Everton, we actually showed real endeavour. We looked quite lively when we did have the ball. It was actually a proper kind of cup tie against a team probably who are about equal to us right now. Like, and on the day, it came down to extra time, and that was the difference between us. I can appreciate for sure that we went there and we tried something a little different to what we've been doing recently. But ultimately, so, just wasn't enough.
So, go on then.
Well, and I think just to be clear, I was being a bit kind of tongue in cheek there. Like, I think what a lot of us want to see is like we want to see Spurs with a decent base and a solid defence. But it's just more that, you know, when Spurs are 1-0 up in these games that they've thrown away in the past, I think everyone would like Mourinho to occasionally be like, oh, you know what, we're winning 1-0, but we've lost a bit of momentum, we've run out of ideas. Here's Dele Alli, you know, try and deal with him. And then if they concede a late goal, well, you know, bad luck, it happens. Or you know, here's Gareth Bale, you know, let's see how you cope with him. Let's try and liven it up in attack. I think that's what we want to see. We don't really want to see just a gung-ho side with absolutely no control at the back. That's not the kind of ideal. But as a one-off game, it was, yeah, good fun, wasn't it?
Jude, so we've got kind of like that. I feel like the approach definitely more positive in terms of City. It's something that I think a lot of Spurs fans would agree with Dan there, that it's almost a game that you write off. Were there any other pros for you from those two?
What, from
Everton or City?
From Everton. Well, I'd say Everton, just in that it was just chaotic fun. And you know what? We had sat through Brighton, Chelsea, Liverpool, those games where they... Oh, just a few of the worst games I've ever seen in my life. And it was just nice to see something a bit batshit happening in a Spurs game, because it doesn't normally happen. I don't think Tottenham have had many games where they've had 9 goals, you know, after 120 minutes. So that was nice. City is a bit trickier because they didn't really land a blow on them at any point. Maybe Kane's free kick aside and Bale's nice little trickery with his feet towards the end. Positives is a bit tough on City, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's basically like a free hit, so.
Right, apologies for the small break in proceedings, but we just wanted to give you a quick message from our new sponsor. That's right, we're a branded podcast now. So support for Oh What A Night is brought to you by Manscaped, who are the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so come along and join the fun. We have an exclusive offer for listeners of Oh What A Night, 20% off, plus free shipping with the code 90min20. So get involved, get 20% off, and don't use the same trimmer that you use on your face as you use on your crown jewels. So let me chat this to you on the negative side, on the bads. So one thing that I did see a lot doing the rounds on social media, Jude, is people saying that they didn't feel much when we lost to City. Mm-hmm. I find that a little bit worrying because that implies, I mean, City are a phenomenal side, but we beat them earlier on in the season. And in recent years, every time we've lost to City, even if they've been the favourites, I felt very annoyed about the fact that we've lost the game because mm-hmm. I feel like it's a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. Maybe didn't feel that way this time around.
It's like that classic line of, you know, you set your expectations really low and then you'll never be disappointed. And I felt like that was the perfect sort of explanation for that game because like they'd won 15 on the bounce or something ridiculous like that. So I think if you weren't really resigned to defeat, having seen Spurs as run of form before the game, you know, you're being very, very optimistic, as nice as it would like to be that you'd like to be that way. I think apathy is never good and it's never a good thing for it to set in among your team's fans. And, but like after four defeats and five, like that stuff's going to happen, unfortunately.
Is apathy worse than being angry? Is that more dangerous?
I think if you're angry, you're like, I know this team can do better because I've seen that they can produce better results. I think apathy is probably worse. Yeah, because it's like, oh, this is what we've come to expect. So it's a bit worrying.
I mean, I opened that one out to the other two as well, to Shawnee and Dan. Like, is that something that will be concerning for, I suppose, for anyone club side, really, if supporters are apathetic?
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will concern the club much more than anger or frustration. I mean, partly as a result of the circumstances, you know, fans being locked out of stadiums and watching all the games on TV naturally will lead to some kind of disconnect, I think. And, you know, people will be looking at their phones and stuff. And maybe when the team's off form, they just won't be making time to be at home for the matches. But, yeah, it's going to concern the club because season ticket renewals won't be too far away. I suspect they'll be delayed a bit this year, but they're normally around March. So, you know, they want people kind of engaged with the team and excited to go back to the stadium. And if people are kind of losing interest and apathy is creeping in, which is what I tweeted at full time against City, and I definitely think there's an element of that. If that's happening, then that will really worry the club. And, you know, that's the kind of reaction from the fan base that feels kind of quite terminal, almost quite kind of end of days for a manager. And I'm not suggesting we're fully there yet, but if it was to kind of totally set in and people, you know, start this almost Sherwoodian perverse interest and just sort of seeing how bad or how comical it gets, then that's really bad. And I don't think we're there yet, to be clear, but, you know, there've been a few kind of warning signs in the last couple of weeks.
Stage direction.
Sean, yeah, it's Sherwoodian. Yeah, it's Sherwoodian in the dictionary anywhere yet? Or has that not been done by Webster's?
Right, come on, Shawnee. Because I feel like for you, you might be... Look, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Are you further along the line than apathy, if that makes sense?
What's that? Emo death.
I think we're at emo death stage. It doesn't deserve to go in the journal anymore. That's how...
Oh God, we're beyond the journal.
But Sean, you get what I mean, right? Because it's a real weird situation at the moment. I know exactly what Dan's saying, in that once you start to see people online almost kind of saying like, lol, imagine if we lose this game. It's like, that's a really weird spot to be in when people are almost betting against their own team.
I stopped watching after about 70, 75 minutes of the week, and that's how just annoyed
I was. You actually
stopped
watching the game?
I stopped watching. I went for a walk in -3 degree weather.
That is the next stage of emo death. That is where it goes. I went for a walk in -3.
I may be gone for some time.
But I think that's just the point. Like, as a fan, I'm not enjoying it. I'm just so far beyond trying to enjoy this at the moment. And I know everyone's saying, oh, we've still got the League Cup final, we're still in the Cups, serial winner, all that crap. But it's just like, I don't want my season and Tottenham's existence to come down to a couple of days a year that you might or might not get. I'd rather enjoy loving my club and having good times. This is not a good time. We are not in a good moment.
Yeah, that phrase is definitely doing the rounds at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not in a good way. Did any of you watch? Go on, Dan. Sorry.
I was just going to interject and say, what do you think Sherwoodian moment of his reign was? I'm torn between him and Ramsey saluting Adebayor, or when he asked the fan to wear his gilet and take charge of the team.
There was one other, wasn't there? It was the gilet throw.
The gilet throw.
Or the interview where he says, like, them lot will be laughing on the bus on the way home. By the time they reach the motorway, they'll be laughing.
Interview where he said, I never felt this bad, never.
That was the Chelsea defeat. Do you know what's a little bit concerning? I remember in the Chelsea defeat, there was two or three individual errors, wasn't there? I think we lost 4-0, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Walker played like right midfield / centre mid, I want to say. Or was Chadley?
Yeah, Aaron Lennon was playing as a 10 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're not there yet.
Didn't Sherwood tell Jorge Jesus from Benfica to fuck off during a game? Or is that not correct?
And we lost.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
And we lost 3-1 at home. And like, he was getting proper. And like, Jesus was doing like his like jigs on the touchline. When the third goal went in, he was like, "This guy is not a manager."
that was Europa League, wasn't it? Was that Europa League? Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
That was bizarre. See, that was chaos. That was absolute chaos at that point, and it felt completely out of control. I don't feel like things are out of control at the moment, but I definitely feel as if the West Ham game suddenly has taken on way too much significance. Does anyone else feel like it's sort of horribly important?
Yeah.
Definitely, because if you can't judge West Brom and City, then you absolutely can judge them on West Ham, because they're close on the table, they're rivals, and they're
a team
that,
on the table now.
they're pulling away. But, you know, that's really a game to judge this side on, I think.
I am kind of interested to what should be the ambition now? Like, what should be? I feel like we're in purgatory a bit here. You know, I don't really know whether we should be looking at the table and being like, right, we need to get as close to top four as possible. Definitely feels like European football is something that Spurs need, just in terms of club sustainability. But silverware is important, which makes it all the more ugly that we went out of the FA Cup, Sean.
Yeah, it's like I said a couple of weeks ago, like everything about Mourinho's reign now is just becoming about the like the what ifs, buts, whatever. Like, I think, like, even with the Everton game, it's, oh, would you rather lose 5-4 or would you rather lose 1-0 and we got our answer there, we'd rather lose 5-4. Would you rather try your hand at winning a cup if it means you come like ninth? We're finding out now.
Sorry, go on, mate.
No, go on.
That's really fascinating, because that was one of the things. So did you see Jamie Carragher's sort of discussion around this on Monday Night Football?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was the first time that I've seen someone address the Mourinho Poch kind of philosophies and actually almost say, yeah, maybe we overcooked the whole you need to win a trophy thing.
Hmm. No, he's definitely right. I think it's really kind of tough to break into that kind of, well, it used to be the big four, didn't it? It was Arsenal, United, Liverpool and Chelsea, and they were just kind of the established clubs. Chelsea had kind of bought their way in the early 2000s. Arsenal had worked their way on under Wenger. And then City came with the new money and it was easier for them to spend their way into it. For us, it's been more difficult because we didn't have a big stadium yet. We didn't spend nearly as much money as anyone else. It was a really kind of slow process, and it was going to be a slow process of just having a habit of winning trophies rather than really trying really, really hard to get them. I think that was the thing, where under Poch, he didn't really value the League Cup or the FA Cup. And maybe if he did try a bit harder, he would have won one, because we just would have had those winning habits. He didn't really value that, but Carragher nailed it. It was the thing that was special about Poch was he didn't, not that we thought that we could go win an FA Cup or a League Cup. It was that we thought we could win the Premier League and the Champions League. That was what set him apart.
Yeah. I think we should also probably focus in this section, in terms of the ugly pieces on the errors. Like we mentioned it earlier on in the pod about individual errors, but in both games they crept in, didn't they, Jude? You could almost point at every single goal and say there's an error that has led to that.
Spurs are just far too easy to score against at the moment. And I think that 7 minute period at Everton, where, like, just leading up to half time, like, Spurs have played pretty well before like the 35th or 6th minute. They had their 1-0 lead, and then suddenly just three goals go in. You get Sigurdsson, you get Calvert-Lewin, and then a penalty gets given away, and like an otherwise decent half turns into 3-1 simply because like people at the back aren't really switched on. And then the City one was just awful as well. Like, I'm not going to pile in on Højbjerg. It's like his second bad game in a row, but like he's had about 40 other good ones, so it's tough. But the Gundo one, their City's second goal just seemed like too easy. I know the build-up was lovely, and they were really patient, and suddenly Gundo one burst into the box, but it wasn't one where I was thinking, oh, this is a definite goal. Like, I thought somebody would be able to stick their foot out and stop that one from going in.
He drifted into a pocket of space in the box.
Yeah, there was just too much space just like left gaping open. And Lloris, like, I'm not going to start sending for Lloris because he's a good keeper, but like, he just seems like he's got chocolate wrists at the moment. I think Jamie O'Hara said that the other day. He's got chocolate wrists. But then he also said, throw Joe Hart in goal. So...
Oh, wow.
So I'm not sure about either of those shouts.
What, Dan, at what point does the conversation open up on Lloris?
Well, I think there's already a conversation there. But actually, I'm quite inclined to defend Lloris at the moment. I mean, I think a lot of the time, a goalkeeper is just only as good as the defence in front of him. I mean, look at Alisson, right? I mean, we thought when he was playing behind Van Dijk and Gomez on that Liverpool defence that he was the best thing since sliced bread. He couldn't put a foot wrong. And then suddenly, you know, you put him in front of a defence with, you know, debutants and young players and low on confidence, players out of position. And he's crumbled. And I don't think that's any coincidence. And it's happened, you know, if I'm not wrong, you know, Edison didn't look great at the start of the season when City was struggling, and now looks brilliant when Ruben Diaz and kind of rejuvenated Stones are in there. I think you're seeing it throughout the Premier League. You know, there's not a lot of great goalkeepers in the league at the moment, but that's because there's not a lot of great defences. So I think, you know, Lloris has lost confidence. And he's been short of confidence for a while, but then he's been playing in front of, you know, a different defence every week. and players who are really short of confidence themselves and keep making mistakes. So I kind of want to defend him. At the same time, that's not to say Lloris hasn't been on what I think it's fair to say is a kind of fairly gentle but steady decline over the last probably two or three seasons, possibly kind of since winning the World Cup. And obviously there has to be a conversation about his successor and heir very soon, you know, this summer. I don't think it's Joe Hart, you know. Well, I think we all agree it's not Joe Hart, but clearly that has to happen. But kind of, yeah, short term, I think I want to defend Lloris, even though he was pretty poor against City and Everton, because I think he's playing in front of a shambolic defence. And if you put him in City's team for Edison, I don't think there'd be a huge amount of difference between those two.
I think it's a good point, Dan, in that. Oh, cheers. I thought it was a good point, Dan, where you said the defence in front of Lloris doesn't really help him, because there have been times like the last two or three years where even though he has started declining, he's actually come up with some really big moments. But I just think the more we've kind of sat in, the more that the defence has been chopped and changed, the more vulnerable he has looked. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think if we did a ranking of the Premier League goalies yesterday on the site, and you could see at the very top of the list were the teams who had generally the better defences, and not just in terms of like the elite clubs, but like the better mid-table sides had better defences. And I feel it's just all crap, isn't it? It's just
you need confidence, and you need consistency. Yeah. And he's played in front of three right backs in as many games, Doherty, Aurier and Tanganga. He's played in front of probably five centre backs in the last three or four games, two left backs in the last four or five games. You know, it's constantly changing, and no one's doing well in front of him. I don't think this is on him. I think a great goalie is only as great as the players in front of him. You rarely get, you know, a kind of De Gea. You know, maybe is an outlier when Man U were terrible and he kept saving them week in, week out. But normally, what happens is the defense starts to go, and then the goalie follows pretty soon after it. And I think, you know, you're seeing that with Alisson in particular at the moment.
Yeah, that's. It's interesting though, because it makes you wonder how you try and arrest that, how you stop that, considering the transfer window's gone. There doesn't seem to be any centre-back that Jose's prepared to hang his hat on, perhaps with the exception of Eric Dier, but ironically enough, Eric Dier's been in really poor form recently and has struggled a lot, particularly since the Liverpool game. Are we just kind of, is this going to be it for the rest of the season, do you think? Is there any way of fixing this?
I honestly think it'll probably just be more try and get 1-0 leads and hang on, and we'll see what's what. They've obviously got City, Chelsea and Liverpool as those two games. They're out of the way now, so the running is a little kind of there. But yeah, I think I'd honestly just stick Roden in the middle, because I know he made the mistake against Liverpool, but he's sort of the one player who has looked okay in recent weeks, even in that Liverpool defeat. I thought he stood up reasonably well, and he actually looked like he wanted some of the fight as well. I don't really want to hang my hat on Eric Dier, just because that I'm still not over that Chelsea penalty where it was just total brain fart and he's just swinging his legs in the box. It didn't make any sense. I mean, none of those CB options are decent. Just play Roden and Tanganga and see. Like,
are you there with it? Genuinely? Are you saying that genuinely?
Like, yeah, I think so. I mean, I know Davinson Sanchez sort of had his Kieran Tierney moment on Saturday where his legs got in a tangle and he just flopped to the floor.
It was beyond Kieran Tierney, wasn't it?
I think his confidence is just shot, and it's sad that he hasn't progressed to the level we would have liked him to. And I don't think Tanganga is any worse than any of them at the moment. He's sort of the one player in that defence who came out with a little bit of credit on Saturday. So, you know, why not just give him a little go and, you know, see what happens.
Let's.
I'm with Jude on that.
Are you?
Yeah. No, well, no, in fact, no, I'm not quite. I'm not at Tanganga what? And Roden. I think I'm not there. I'm at pick one of them, whichever one Mourinho thinks is more promising, and give them a run, probably next to Alderweireld, who can be a kind of elder statesman and hopefully just kind of lead by example a bit and guide them through games. I don't understand. That's what I'd like to see happen. One of those two. And at least then they'll be learning on the job. If they're making mistakes, you'd like to think they're learning from mistakes. My problem with maybe playing both of them is you don't have a kind of elder sort of statesman back there, and you know that's a potential recipe for kind of breaking two young players quite quickly.
So also, I think Alderweireld's just a much better passer than any other defender that we have. His range of passing is just far better than anyone else. And he actually at least provides you with a little bit of a platform to get the ball into midfield or maybe skip the midfield and find someone out wide, you know?
I'm not having that once they're all fit, a back five of Lloris, Aurier, one of Roden, Tanganga, Alderweireld and Reguilon can't at least be a decent defence. That should be coachable at the very least.
Yeah, and we should certainly at least flag the fact that Reguilon is up there with the best left backs in the league, and we are really missing what he gives us in terms of pace at the back, but also going forward as well.
Alderweireld can like ping balls towards Reguilon. I think it was the Fulham game where it was just one ball over to Reguilon, crossing to Kane, and that was a goal. So that sort of does highlight, you know, stick Alderweireld at the back, get those fullbacks bombing forward and get balls into the box, and that's how we can build attacks from centre back. Yeah,
right. Some green shoots of hope, some things to be optimistic about that we'll put in the beautiful. Has anyone got anything that you're thinking, right, okay, it will improve, it's going to get better?
What about just Bale's nice kind of jinking run?
I'm so glad you brought that up. I didn't want to be the one that like is just putting my entire mortgage on Gareth Bale, but I that did everything for me in that.
I want to add that because I went for my walk, I haven't actually seen this yet.
Brilliant. It was very good. Go on, Dan.
Well, it was a glimmer, wasn't it? And that's all we really wanted from Bale, from that cameo. You just want him to show something that suggests there's light at the end of the tunnel for him. And I think that move and shot was it. I do feel quite bleak about the Bale situation generally. I think it's a catch-22 where he doesn't trust his body, and he's not going to trust his body without a run of games, and Mourinho's not going to give him a run of games until he trusts his body. So we're stuck. But he should start on Thursday. You'd think he'd start both legs against Wolfsburg. There, you know, more opportunities to sort of turn his season around. The moment against Man City, I think, just showed that, you know, against the very best side in the league, you know, he still has something to offer. He still nearly made something happen. It was the best moment for Spurs after Kane's free kick, which isn't saying much, but said something. So yeah, let's hope he builds on it and does something on Thursday against the side who, from what I can understand, are, you know, roughly the level of the Europa League group stage opponents. So, you know, should be pretty easily beatable.
There's been a lot of like, there's been a change, hasn't there, in the narrative towards Gareth Bale from the wider media, it feels, over the course of the last month or so. Like suddenly the lens is very much turned from why isn't Mourinho playing to him, as he needs to do more.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously Mourinho is quite good at controlling the narrative, and you know, that's seems to be his position, that, you know, Bale needs to do more. But I do, as I said, I do see both sides. I think, you know, Bale's someone who is just struggling to trust his body, and, you know, he's struggling to get up to speed and probably needs, you know, three or four games in a month or something, you know, full games, to really get there. And it's hard to see Mourinho giving him that. Mourinho's always been a manager that wants his players to run through walls for him. He's always been a manager that's been, you know, pretty sceptical about kind of fatigue and pretty sceptical about knocks and, you know, players worrying about feelings, which is what he alluded to with Bale before the Everton game, wasn't it? So it doesn't feel like a match made in heaven, really. It feels like two pretty different positions, and I can see both.
God, I hope he comes through against Wolfsburg. I really do. Like, it was such a, it touched into such a nostalgic, romantic sort of part of supporting Tottenham when he returned. And it's kind of been so sad that we haven't even had really more than two or three moments to hang it on. And the other thing that I can't stand is fans of other teams being like, oh, this is such an awful signing, blah, blah, blah. I just don't feel like he's had an opportunity to show whether it's a good or bad signing at the moment. I don't really feel like he's actually had a successful run of games where you go, okay, well, maybe he isn't at it, or maybe he is, you know. And so when you get glimpses like that against Man City, it just gives you that little bit of optimism that that it might work out. Shawnee, just quickly on Europa League, important to get through this one, isn't it?
Yeah, this is. I was going to say it might be a better shot of winning the Europa League than it is the League Cup. But I guess that's just a one-off game. But we're still among the best sides in the competition. I think what we've got to remember is probably by the time the last stages come around, we should be like completely out of like a race for a top four. We'll be like just fighting for the top six. And I think the real positive is that we do have good players. We do have a good team. We can't forget that amid all this kind of crap and this down feeling. We have two of the best players in the league. We have two good midfielders in Højbjerg. I know he's been a bit crap recently, but it's his first bad run. We have Ndombele. We have Reguilón to come back. We've got Lo Celso to come back. We've got Dele to come back into the fold. This is a good team. This is a team that could easily win Europa League.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree there. It's just like just about which team turns up. Thankfully, the side that we're playing against is not going to set the world alight. But we'll be back to discuss it all, hopefully after Gareth Bale smashed it. And we're all fully optimistic, and we've got lots of exciting, good stuff to talk about come the weekend. Hope you enjoyed the pods. If you did, do please leave us a review and subscribe if you haven't already. Make sure you check out all the guys on Twitter as well. They're great follows. We'll see you all come Friday. What a feeling, what a
night. Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.